जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ जय गिरिवर धारी जय गिरिवर धारी जय गिरिवर धारी जय गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ जय गिरिवर धारी जय गिरिवर धारी जय वल्लभ जय गिरिवर धारी जय गिरिवर धारी जय यशोद नंदन जय ब्रज जन रंजन जय यशोद नंदन जय व्रज जन रंजन जय यमुना तीरवनाचारी जय कुंज बिहारी जय यमुना तीरवनाचारी जय कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा कालचंजी राधा कालचंजी राधे जय राधा माधव राधा माधव राधे जय प्रभुपदा 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 श्रील प्रभुपदा श्रील प्रभुपाद की श्रीमद् भागवतम की श्री एकादशी की और ग्लोरियस सेवन डिवोटीज All glories to seven devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Hare Krishna. So it's very nice to be here in ISKCON Dallas and Sri Sri Radha Kalachanji. I was just thinking that there's a few of us, so if you like, you can come forward. Everyone can come forward, except those who need chairs. They can see right there, yes. They say, I won't feel so lonely here. Please come forward. We'll all be more together, please come. So please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 24, Text 16. That's right. We'll recite the verse line by line. Anur Brihat Krishna Stulo. Yo Bhavan Prasidhyati. Yo Bhava Prasidhyati. Sarvopyubhaya Sanyukta. Sarvopyubhaya Sanyukta. Prakritya Purushena cha. Prakritya Purushena cha. Anur Brihat Krisha Stulo. Yo Bhava Prasidhyati. Sarvopyubhaya Sanyukta. Prakritya Purushena cha. Anur Brihat Krisha Stulo. Yo Bhava Prasidhyati. Sarvopyubhaya Sanyukta. Prakritya Purushena cha. Anur Brihat Krisha Stulo. Yo Bhava Prasidhyati. Sarvopyabhaya Sanyukta. Prakritya Purushena cha. Mataji. Anur Brihat Krisha Stulo. Yo Bhava Prasidhyati. Sarvopyubhaya Sanyukta. Prakritya Purushena cha. Anur Brihat Krisha Stulo. Yo Bhava Prasidhyati. Sarvopyubhaya Sanyukta. Prakritya Purushena cha. Anur Brihat Krisha Stulo. Yo Bhava Prasidhyati. Sarvopyubhaya Sanyukta. Prakritya Purushena cha. Anur Brihat Krisha Stulo. Yo Bhava Prasidhyati. sarvopyubhaya sanyukta prakritya purushena cha anu small brihat great krishna krisa thin stula stout yaya whatever bhava manifestation prasidhyati is established sarvam all api indeed ubhaya by both sanyukta conjoined prakritya by nature purushena by the enjoying spirit soul cha and translation appropriate by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada ki. Translation: whatever features visibly exist within this world, small or great, thin or stout, certainly contain both the material nature and its enjoyer, the spirit soul. And then we'll be reading one more verse, but please repeat after me. Whatever features visibly exist within this world, small or great, thin or stout, certainly contain both the material nature and its enjoyer, the spirit soul. Then text 17, I'll just read the verse once. Yastu yasya dhir antasya savai madhyam chatasya san vikaro vyavahararto yatha taijasa parthivithiva. Translation: gold and earth are originally existing as ingredients. From gold one may fashion gold ornaments such as bracelets and earrings. And from earth one may fashion clay pots and saucers. The original ingredients, gold and earth, exist before the products made from them. And when the products are eventually destroyed, the original ingredients, gold and earth, will remain. Thus, since the ingredients are present in the beginning and at the end, they must also be present in the middle phase. Taking the form of a particular product to which we assign for convenience a particular name, such as bracelet, earring, pot, or saucer. We can therefore understand that since the ingredient cause exists before the creation of a product and after the product's destruction, the same ingredient cause must be present during the manifest phase, supporting the product as the basis of its reality. Purport: the Lord here explains that the original cause is certainly present in its effect, citing the example of gold and clay functioning as the causal ingredients of many different products in which gold and clay continue to be present. For our convenience, we assign different names to temporary products, although their essential nature continues to be that of the ingredient and not of the temporary product. Om Jnanam Timurandasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dati Swapadantikam. So this is the chapter entitled The Philosophy of Sankhya, and it appears to be a very philosophical section, a section that's very technical, very philosophical. We might consider this to be a little irrelevant. We might think, oh, this is philosophy, technical. But we have to remember that the first time this was spoken, it was spoken, maybe not the first time, but the time when we know about it, when it was first spoken, is from Kapiladev to his mother Devahuti. So Kapiladeva is instructing his mother Devahuti on the philosophy of Sankhya. And here Krishna is also speaking the same philosophy to Uddhava. So this is the importance of this, that we can understand that twice in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this same knowledge is being repeated. So when we ask, why is this knowledge so important? Why is it necessary? Why is it so important? And we will discuss this. The reason is because this knowledge is not just, you could say, scientific knowledge of the world. It's not just analytical knowledge of the world. But it's knowledge that is actually meant to help us realize Krishna. It's knowledge that's actually meant to lead us back to Krishna, and how important this knowledge must be. So this is called the philosophy of Sankhya. Now, there's many different philosophical systems in Indian philosophy in general, but the Srimad Bhagavatam, primarily, actually, for most of its discussion, it talks about the philosophy of Sankhya more than any other philosophy. Again and again, it's discussing Sankhya. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also mentions Sankhya. So why is this? Because Sankhya is actually originally a theistic philosophy. Then later on, we have an atheistic Sankhya that someone teaches, a false Kapila teaches. But Sankhya itself is actually a theistic philosophy. Why is it? Because it's showing how every aspect of this world is coming from the Lord. It's a transformation of the Lord. So there's many philosophies, as you mentioned, but there's two main philosophies. One is called Satkaryavad, philosophies in original Vedic philosophy, so to say, or Indian philosophy. One is called Satkaryavad, which is says that the effect is present in the cause. And the other is called Asatkaryavad, which says the philosophical system which says that the effect is different than the cause. So the basic problem goes like this, which is being explained in this verse, that gold and earth, for example, earth is the same thing that an earthen pot is made of. You have the earth and you have the earthen pot. And the earth is transformed in a certain way to make the earthen pot, right? And you have a nice clay pot and you have clay on the ground. Now the question is the pot the same as the clay, or is it different than the clay? Who would like to say? Is the pot, is it the same as the clay, or is it different than the clay? Or just like we have the earth on the ground, right? It's clay, it's soil, and we have vegetables. We have vegetables that we eat and all these things. So is that the same? Are the vegetables the same as the earth, or is it different than the earth? It's a very difficult question, isn't it? Nice point. You're saying that it's the same, but it's manifested into a vegetable or into a pot. It's the same earth, but it's manifested into a vegetable or into a pot. Everyone agree or someone disagrees? Someone says that it's different. So the Asatkaryavad philosophers, they say that it's different. They say that the vegetable is different than the clay. And Satkaryavad, which is the philosophy of Sankhya, it says that the clay and the vegetable, or the clay and the pot, are one and the same. But they are the transformation of that original clay. And this is what this verse is saying, is that clay becomes the pot, and the pot becomes clay again. So therefore, it's the same item, but it's just transformed by the power of an agent. So this is called parinam. Parinam means transformation. So the Bhagavatam is teaching the philosophy of parinam satkaryavad, or the cause is equal to the effect, but the effect is a transformation of the cause. Now, the reason this is so important is because it's telling us that how Krishna, although he's one, he can manifest alone into all of these different forms, all of these different qualities, all of these different items. Because someone may come in this world, and when we see that all of these things are existing, and when we think that, well, all of these things are different than God, right? They're all different. They're all separate from God. They're all different. But the scriptures want to teach us that, no, actually they're all the same as Krishna, because they're all a transformation of his energy. they're all nothing is separate from Krishna. Though it may appear to be separate from Krishna, everything is a transformation of Krishna. Yet at the same time, everything is not God, everything is not Krishna. Because if we say that everything is God, everything is Krishna, then that means all of us are God. I am God, you are God, everyone is God. And this is also a problem. We find in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, when Lord Chaitanya was a small child, then one time he was playing. And when he was playing in the garden, then he started to eat mud, like children do. Right? They always like to go and they like to eat mud. That is, Krishna also did this. He went and ate mud. And in every pastime of Krishna or Lord Chaitanya, they eat mud to show a different reason. So in the pastime of Lord Krishna, Krishna eats mud because later on he wants to show Mother Yashoda the entire universe within his mouth. To show that though he is a small child, he's still the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everything is inside him and outside of him, both simultaneously. This is his wonder. But in the case of Lord Chaitanya eats this mud to give a teaching to the rest of the world through his mother again. So Lord Chaitanya eats this clay. And Mother Sachi, she comes and she sees that Nimai, Lord Chaitanya's childhood name was Nimai. Nimai is eating clay. So she begins to scold him and tell him that, why are you eating this clay? I told you not to eat mud. Why are you eating this clay? Just like small children, we see that they immediately don't know, when they're very small especially, they go outside and the moment they see dirt, they put it in their mouth. Right? They'll see a little insect and they'll put it in their mouth. So mother has to be so careful always, you know. So immediately they take this clay and they put it in their mouth. But look, Nimai by that time was 3 or 4 years old. So his mother had told him so many times, don't eat this clay, don't eat this clay. And so she begins to scold him and say, why are you still eating this clay, even though I've told you not to eat it? So to that, Lord Chaitanya, he responds. He says that, Mother, what is the problem in eating this clay? This clay is the same clay that you are cooking every day. Every day you're feeding me nothing other than earth. The vegetables are grown from earth. The seed of a plant is nothing but earth. If you mash it, it will become dirt. So every day you're cooking this earth and feeding it to us. You're giving me rice. You're giving me water. And the only thing that I've eaten is rice and water in the form of this clay. So if you're cooking and giving me this clay every day, then why I cannot eat this clay outside in the dirt? What is the problem with that? Every day you're feeding me that. So this is a very nice question. And Mother Shachi, she has no response to it. You know, she's just simple, you know, lady, and now her small 3-year-old child is asking a very philosophical question. She's like, of course you don't eat clay. What is this? But then Mother Shachi explains to him that, no, although I give you rice, but the rice is different than the clay, and the clay is different from the rice. You can cook the rice and eat it, but you cannot cook the clay and eat the clay. So Lord Chaitanya, therefore, he says, yes, see, this is the difference, that although everything is one in this world, although everything is one in this world, everything is clay, this entire temple is nothing but clay, is dirt in different forms. The dirt produces the trees produce the wood, and then this wood is nothing but clay. But although everything in this world is one, but still it is different. The difference is still there. The difference is still present. One cannot say that everything is one. It is still a transformation. There's still a difference between objects. In the same way, the Mayavadi philosophers, the impersonalists, are correct in saying that everything in this world is God. Therefore, I am God, you are God, we are all God. This temple is God, God is Kalachanji, God is the plate in the restaurant. God is everything. Yet we cannot say that everything is God. God is everything, but everything is not God. Why? Because everything is clay, but everything is not clay. The rice that we eat is different than clay. It is a transformation of that clay, of the energy. In the same way, everything is not God, because we are a transformation of Krishna's energy. We are a part of God. We are transformed from His energy, yet we are different than God. Therefore, for us to consider that we are God is incorrect. we have to understand that the essential element within us is the energy of God. So in essence, everything is God. But still, we are different than God. We are the servants of God, and God is the master. He is our Lord. So this is the philosophy, the amazing, you could say, the resolution to all contradictions. The philosophy of achintya bheda bheda, or oneness and difference. The philosophy that the Lord Krishna is one with everything, just like earth is one with everything, yet he is still different from everything else other than his own self. That he is still completely and fully different than everything. And the Srimad Bhagavatam gives so many examples, analogies to explain this to us. Here the example is given of the earth, and then in other places the example is given, for example, of a fragrance and flower. The fragrance is nothing other than the flower. We smell the fragrance of a flower. It's a flower. Because without the flower, the fragrance cannot exist. But the fragrance also is not the flower. Because you could have a fragrance without the flower. So the fragrance is still separate. It is still different than the flower. In the same way, everything is Krishna, because Krishna is the flower. But everything is the fragrance of Krishna. Therefore, it's not fully Krishna. It is the energy or the power of Krishna that's coming to us. Another very famous example that Prabhupada gives in the Bhagavad Gita is the sun and the sunshine. The sunshine is nothing but the sun, but still it is different than the sun. And the sun is nothing but the sunshine, and the sunshine is nothing other than the sun. So this is the oneness and difference. Achintya bheda bheda. So the Bhagavatam, I was talking how there's these two philosophies, Satkaryavat, where the effect is present in the cause, and Asatkaryavat, which says that the effect is different than the cause. The Bhagavatam sort of, which it does with everything actually, it brings all philosophies together. Just like you have a thesis, you have antithesis, and then you have a synthesis, right? Which brings all of the contradictions. It brings all of these philosophies together and presents the perfect philosophy, which is called Parinamvad, which is actually a bit of both. It's saying that the effect is a transformation of the cause. In that way it is one, yet it is also different than the cause. So here this knowledge is being told to us about the relationship between Krishna and this world. And as I mentioned to you in the beginning, why is this knowledge so important? Now we can think about this. Why is it, the ultimate goal of everything is to chant Hare Krishna and be happy, to glorify Krishna, remember the past sins of Krishna. So why this knowledge is being described here again and again in the Bhagavatam? Is it there just to bore us? Sometimes it feels like we read through Sankhya and then the atom philosophy and this, and we tend to skip through it very quickly to get to the past sins. Why is it present there? It's present there because this world, why is this world here? The purpose of this world, it is here because through this world, we're meant to find Krishna. We're meant to find God. The purpose of this world, that Krishna's made this entire universe, is there so that gradually we can analyze this world and try to seek out God through this world. This is the purpose of this world. So this same reason, this philosophy is there, so that through this philosophy we can analyze the world. We can try to understand it, and we can try to find God, Krishna, present in the world that we are living in. Because this is a world we have to interact with. Every day we have to drink water, right? We have to get some vitamin D. So that means we have to sit in the sun for some time. Right? We have to eat food and grow vegetables in the garden, or go to the supermarket and buy vegetables. So these are practical, realistic facts of this world. And so therefore, by understanding the relationship, Krishna's relationship with the world, when we interact with these elements of the world, we can remember Krishna. We can understand Krishna. And that's the beauty of the knowledge that's being present here, and the importance of this. Just like in the Gita, again and again, Krishna says, I am the taste of water. I am the light of the sun and moon. I am the present in all beings, right? I am of great bodies of water. I am the ocean. So he's giving us different ways of looking at this world and reminding ourselves, this is Krishna. This is Krishna. This is Krishna. There's a beautiful verse in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, which says that one who is serious about knowing the Lord, that person must endeavor to find Krishna in all things, in all ways, and at all times. Such a person has to research and through this world find Krishna through every atom, through every particle of this world. Not that a person is speculating, but rather whatever one sees or works with, one tries to find the Lord through that aspect and through nothing else. Just like this wonderful, beautiful story of Hanuman is there. At one time, Hanuman, this is after Lord Ram and everyone, they conquest and they win over Ravana, and they win the battle of Lanka, and they're back in Ayodhya, and Lord Ram and Sita and Hanuman, they're all back there, and once they've returned to Ayodhya, then Hanuman is sitting next to Ram and Sita. And Lord Ram is now coronated as king. Everyone is so happy, joyful. Sita and Ram have been united. So at this point, Sita Devi is giving gifts to everyone. She's so pleased. And she's so happy that she's been united with Lord Ram. And Ram is now king. So out of her joyfulness, she's now the queen. She's giving gifts to everyone. And so she gives something to someone and something to Sugriv, something to Angad, something to Bharat and Shatrughan. And everyone is with so much love is and gratitude is accepting these gifts. And then she gives her own necklace, her pearl necklace. She gives it to Hanuman as a gift. She says, you take this gift. And this is the most intimate gift that she has. Because this necklace is around her own neck. So it's touching her body, her neck, and she takes that off and she gives it to Hanuman. Because Hanuman, as you know, is the dearest of Lord Ram's servants. So this is just, you could say, a folk story. And so Hanuman, he takes this necklace, and being the Krishna's intimate associate, but also the nature, he's a monkey also. So he takes this and he takes this necklace, and then when he takes it, he starts chewing on it. He starts breaking it, chewing on it. And everyone's looking at him. You received the best gift. Mother Sita is giving you a necklace. Why are you breaking this and chewing on this? So then he keeps on breaking them. Then finally someone asks him. He says, why are you breaking this necklace? Why are you chewing on it? And opening these pearls, breaking these and opening these pearls. And then Hanuman saying that I'm opening and I'm breaking them because I'm seeing, trying to find, is my Lord Ram present in these pearls? Because the only thing he's interested in is Sita Ram. Are they present in this pearl? So he starts to break it and open it, and finding Lord Ram in his pearls. So then someone tells him. He says, "Yes, they're present. But what about your own body? Right, your own body is there. Because he says that unless Sita and Ram are present in them, it's worthless to me." So someone says, well, what about your own body, this material body that you have? This, of course, devotees have spiritual bodies, but someone says, what is the purpose? So then Lord Hanuman thinks, actually, that, yeah, what is the purpose of this body that I have if Krishna and, you know, Srimati Radharani or Sita Ram are not present there? So then he tears open his heart. And that famous picture is there of Hanuman tearing open his heart, and in there Sita and Ram are there, to show the world that Krishna is present here. Therefore, this body of mine is worthwhile, it is significant, and it is very nice. Right? So, this is the goal of a devotee, that the devotee understands the purpose of this world. The purpose of this world, why has Krishna given us this amazing world? So many amazing mountains, rivers, and so many difficulties also, so many challenges, so many storms, hurricanes. Why has Krishna given us this world? Because through all of the aspects of this world, right, through the each and every situation, place, object of this world, Krishna is helping us understand Him, realize Him. It's like they say, you take a thorn out with a thorn. So on one hand, this world is our great trap. It's bondage. It's the thing that's pulling us in this world. But at the same time, it is this world only through which we will purify ourselves and realize Krishna. And therefore, the devotee is very carefully examining the world and understanding what is how is this world related with Krishna. There's a great philosopher, Socrates, who says, an unexamined life is not worth living. Right, so we have to examine the world in this way. In the 16th, 17th century, there are these great Christian philosophers and theologians, these very devout Christians, who were trying to preach the message of God in Europe in the 16th century. And they were trying to make people become Christians, convert them to Christianity. And this was a time when there was a lot of problems going on in the church. In the sort of the administration, people lost faith in the Pope. You know, there's some scandal or something like this. So people had stopped going to the church. So they thought, well, how can we bring faith back? How can we again encourage people to become faithful? So they thought, well, the best way is, you know, people have lost faith in the church and in the Bible. They're questioning all these things. So they thought the best way is to try to convince people by arguing for the existence of God based upon reason and logic. And that is, by observing the world, we can argue for the existence of God. So by looking at nature and studying it closely, and by appreciating nature, they thought we can understand the mind of God. And they also took this study to be a form of worship. They did this, they believed that God had two books that he wrote. One was the Bible and the other was nature. So nature is the book of God. It's God teaches through this world. So they thought that by studying nature, we are studying God's book. And we are studying the mind of God. And these philosophers came to be known as natural theologians. They're known as natural theologians. And quite interestingly enough, it was this religious attempt to try to find God through nature, which now becomes known as the argument from design, right? The famous intelligent design philosophers. It's these group of people who were the fathers of modern science. They were actually the first scientists. And one of the first few of them was Isaac Newton. Newton, we know, the famous physicist, optician, he was thermodynamics. He had contributed to every form of science that we know today. He wrote the Principia Mathematica, which is the basic book of science, of mathematics, of calculus. That was the basis of all of physics, all of science. And people know today, people know him as a great physicist and a great scientist. But what people don't know is that originally, historically, he was actually a theologian. He was the son of a priest. And the reason why he did his science was to try to argue for the existence of God. Try to understand, and not just argue for the existence of God, but even for his own self. He saw this as a form of worship. Try to understand God's creation. And so, it's described that Newton wrote over 1 million words on God and religion and all these things. 10 times more than what he wrote on science. And none of us have Newton's books on God, right? This is the modern education and academic world, that here is the greatest scientist in history, and all of his religious books are hidden. They're actually in a museum somewhere in Israel, I think. And they haven't been translated still. A few books have been translated, but most of his books haven't. But all we know is his science. And so today historians, they ask the question that why did Newton, this great scientist, this great theologian who wrote 1 million words on God, why did he do his science? Right? Why did he study his science? And what people say, what historians, they're very fascinated by this. And the response to this question is actually found in Newton's own writing. In his book, Principia Mathematica, in the introduction to that, Newton himself writes the purpose of this. He says, this is the exact words, he says that nothing would please me more than if by reading this, the Principia Mathematica, faith in God will be established, will be encouraged. Yes, this is his own words in this famous scientific text, the first book on calculus. He writes that nothing would please me more if by reading this book on calculus, faith in God would be strengthened. Why? Because he thought that if I can show that in this world that in fact there are laws by which the world works, which today we know to be the laws of physics, the laws of mathematics, right? If I can show that In fact, this world is being run by laws, and it's not moving by chance, right? It's not working by chance that one day, you know, the sun rises at 4 in the afternoon, one day it rises at 3 in the morning. But actually there are specific laws that run the world. Then, he says, then obviously people will think that if there's laws in this world, then there must be a lawmaker. There must be someone who's made these laws, who's actually established these laws. So he thought that if there's laws in this world, then it'll be obvious to the rest of the world that obviously there's a lawmaker. The foolish scientists, so to say, some foolish scientists after him who came, they took those laws and they said, ah, therefore the world comes by chance. But actually his whole point was the obvious. He said that if there's a method, if there's a routine to the world, then how could it be that it comes by chance? It must be that it comes by a certain methodology of laws. So I will stop here. We discussed many nice points in this connection. If there's any comments or questions on these verses, we can talk about those. Yes, so that's a nice follow-up question. The question is, Newton studied this world, and the purpose of that study was to understand or realize God. So is it necessary for us to study this world to realize God? Or can we just get to the point of Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam? Krishna is the goal, he's the end. So yes, it is important for us to study the world to realize God, so that we are deeply convinced of this, but not through mental speculation, but through the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? And this is why the third canto, the second canto, it's all about the creation of this world, the different elements. The third canto, the 25 elements of material elements, Kapila Dev is telling Devahuti. Here in the 11th canto, again, Krishna is telling Uddhava. In the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna is telling how he's present in every aspect of this world. Why again and again is being described? For this purpose, because the reality is that Krishna says in the Gita, we are embodied. We're not liberated souls. We are entrenched in this material world, fully nailed in this body and in this world. So therefore, for those of us who are entrenched in this world, Srila Prabhupada says, we must read these narrations, right? That's why he said we must start from Canto 1, gradually work our way up to Canto 10. Why can we not just start from Canto 10, Krishna's pastimes? Because we have to understand Krishna's relationship with this world. We have to understand how great the Lord is, how small we are, and our connection with Him. So, yes, of course, by the mercy of the devotee, and by Krishna's mercy, everything is possible. And we simply have to chant Hare Krishna, and we can go back to Godhead by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. But for those of us who are capable, we get Srila Prabhupada's mercy when we read these narrations, when we understand the world through Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Because by examining the world carefully through Bhagavatam, we can learn how to transcend it. Actually, this Sangha section of Bhagavatam describes that the yogi is understanding all these things so that the yogi can know that it's these 25 elements that are covering me. So then therefore, step by step, one by one, the yogi can break off these elements. He can say, okay, earth, I'm not earth. Therefore, detach the soul from earth. Mind, some people say, well, I'm not earth, but I'm this mind, my mind, you know, my intelligence. I'm so poetic. He says, no, I'm not this mind either. This mind is not mine. But then someone says, ah, but I'm very smart. I can distinguish between the soul and the body through my intelligence. Then no, the Bible said, you are not this intelligence. Okay, break off this intelligence, not this material intelligence. So like this, the 25 elements are being described, and the yogi is pinpointing them so that through the yoga process he can break each one off and then understand his nature as a pure soul, servant of Krishna. Nice point. Thank you. Nice question. Very nice question. Yes. Yes. Therefore, we understand this knowledge. Right. So the question is, what about the aspect that we are very tiny and Krishna is infinite? You know, how can our small intelligence, so to say, understand this knowledge? And what will be the purpose when Krishna is so unlimited. So therefore, we are not natural theologians. In some sense, therefore, the idea, the attempt of trying to figure out the world through one's intelligence is not something that our acharyas have encouraged. Though Newton and these great Christian theologians, they did it. For Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, they specifically say that through this rational method, we cannot understand God. We can further appreciate God, they say. Therefore, the arguments from design are actually present there in the Vedas also, in the Puranas, present everywhere, because they say that we must rationally understand God also. It should make sense to us. But we cannot really do that because we are so small. And therefore, we take the route of the descending process, where we understand the world through the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because we're so finite, Krishna's infinite, we can still understand Him through the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's this verse in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 1. Maya sakta mana partha yogam yunjan madashaya asangshayam samagramam yatha gyasasi tachinu. Where Krishna is saying, Maya sakta mana partha, that those who are deeply attached to me, they have great attachment to me. Maya sakta, meaning that they're my devotee. They love me, they serve me, they're devoted to me. Maya sakta mana partha yogam yunjan, and are connected through me, to me through yoga, madashaya, asangshayam. He says, such people know me asangshayam, without doubt. Such people know me without doubt. And then, well, that's amazing. I can know God without a doubt, meaning directly, see Krishna. But then he says a word that's even more amazing. It's very actually bewildering. He says, samagram, asangshayam samagram. He says, not just without a doubt, but he says samagram, which means completely. Such people, such my devotees, they're so dear to Krishna. He says, they know me without doubt, and they know me completely or fully. Samagram mam, yatha gyasati tachrinam. Simply by hearing about me, they can know me in completeness. So now the question that comes up is that Krishna is saying this, but this seems impossible. It actually feels impossible. Because if Krishna is infinite, if he's unlimited, how can anyone know him completely? Even as pure devotees, right? Because the Bhagavatam in one verse, it says that even Krishna himself does not know himself completely. Right? Even Krishna himself doesn't know the limits of his glories. Anantashesh, he's constantly, eternally been glorifying Krishna's glories with his millions of mouths, yet he doesn't come to the end of Krishna's glories. That's how great Krishna is. That's how vast his glories are. Then how is it that the devotee can know Krishna completely? How is it that this verse of the Gita can actually be true? And this is why Krishna is actually inconceivable. Because though he is inconceivable and unlimited, but he's inconceivable because though he's inconceivable to his own devotee, he can reveal himself completely. That is still, even though Krishna doesn't know the end of his own limits, Anantashesh cannot reach the end of his glories, but still Krishna can reveal himself to his devotee completely. And this is why the devotees know Krishna completely, so deeply. And simply because of this surrender through grace, right? He's saying, not through their intellectual knowledge, but through grace. But we have to, Bhagavatam is simultaneously also saying that we also have to search out the Lord. Right? Even though Krishna gives knowledge of him, but we have to also make the effort to search out the Lord and find Krishna. That's our duty. That's how Krishna is pleased. So therefore we should study these books, right? We should, Prabhupada said, he said that every person must study my books, every person must study, because this is a way of worshipping Krishna, of getting his mercy. Any other final question, comment? From our wonderful, attentive audience here. Okay, thank you very much. We'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.